Hi, welcome to the ESI What's Next podcast. I'm your host, Alex Feldman, and I'm taking you on a journey to learn about the exciting student entrepreneurs coming out of the ESI program. In the final part of our mini-series, Ensuring Sustainability, we're sitting down with Hinata Sagatoski, Corporate Responsibility, Strategy, and Development Manager from Rimi Baltic, to learn about the supermarket chain's journey to champion sustainability. To be able to meet the global challenges the world faces, we need more corporations stepping up and taking the lead. By changing the options available to consumers, they can become sustainable with their dollars. Will this collaboration be enough to make a difference? Hi, Hinata. Thank you so much for joining us today. Before we get started, can you let people know a little bit about yourself?
Okay, sure. Hi, everyone. My name is Renata Sagatauske, and you already know my title, so I'm working at Rimi Baltic, responsible for corporate responsibility initiatives, and we have a small team over there. I'm part of it. Focusing, you know, on a couple of aspects of corporate responsibility, so we have some split in there, and I'm mostly in charge on the health aspect because that's very closely related to what retail is doing and how we see we can impact also our consumers' behavior, also helping them out to live and choose more healthier products. And another part, there's also more initiatives to that. So we are working very intensively on reducing our CO2 emissions. We already are a climate neutral company. That's part of our team's job. And I also can call myself a sustainability enthusiast because I'm not only working in the corporate job, but I have co-founded a social enterprise, which is called Miesto Laboratorija here in Vilnius in Lithuania. And we already been working there for almost 6-7 years on educating, as we call, green residents of the city on how to change their behavior and live more sustainably in the city environment. So a lot of workshops, and that's kind of my hobby, as I say. So kind of, you know, I have my daily work and I have some after work activities related to the same topic. For my background also maybe to understand, I'm educated as a journalist, started there, and then I moved to the sustainability topic and did my master's degree in international development at Amsterdam University. And this is where I kind of started my career and after graduating in CSR and sustainability when I came back to Lithuania, and that's how I moved on.
Can I ask, so what was, let's say, the driver, or how did you get this interest from kind of moving from journalism more towards corporate responsibility and sustainability?
Yes, exactly. Actually, it was one time when we had to choose what kind of research to do as a journalist. And I was looking into different topics and somehow I stuck onto climate change. It was like almost 10 years ago. And I thought, okay, that's something interesting for me to look into. And I also noticed that it's not so much information around that. So I started with that research. And then I also did my bachelor's degree research on that, and it stuck with me, this topic, kind of as my specialty. Then I started to work as a journalist writing on science and climate topics in news outlet here in Lithuania. And I was writing and doing a lot of interviews with scientists, you know, and what I noticed that, yes, I do a lot of work. I put my work online, and the reading of that, you know, articles, it was very disappointing, especially when you have statistics and you can compare how much often, you know, people are opening some news about some, you know, stars doing things and some people doing stupid things, but not so much interested in science things. And I thought, okay, I want to make a change. So what can I do? Where can I start? Because it looks like I have to do something from the inside. It's not enough just to tell the story. Probably I have to do something else. So then I think that was the moment when I understood that I have to do more studying on this topic because it was very complicated. And of course, you know, it was not in kind of my backbone, you know, in the journalism studies. We covered different topics. So that's how I decided to do my master's. And I also did go to the Philippines to do my research and focused on sustainability aspects in the city environment. And that's how I started. And of course, CR was always there because I saw that companies that have really huge impact, but somehow we are overestimating sometimes these things. And we think that, oh, you know, all these things that related to charity overall, just solving social problems are being done by NGOs or should be initiated by the governments. And that's what we are also as business sometimes expecting somebody to tell us what to do. That's why we also have SDGs, you know, which were created by the United Nations and helping us to guide our actions. And I was thinking, okay, but businesses, they have a lot of power and they can do the investments and they really have this opportunity to make a change and also even profit from that and then again reinvest, you know. So that's how I turned into business and decided to see, you know, can I make any sort of a change working in this environment.
Interesting. And what, let's say, or maybe the question is, did you, let's say, once you got out into the professional world, did you immediately start working at Rimi or did you kind of gradually make your way over there? Or it's, I think it's kind of really interesting to do this kind of work for a supermarket chain.
Yes, and consider.
So I'm curious to get what is your journey to actually end up working for a supermarket chain in this capacity?
I can tell you it was an interesting time. So I started to work in CR, I think now roughly 7 years ago. And I started actually not in retail at all. I started in banking.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So my first employer was Barclays. They had their office here in Vilnius in Lithuania. It was more focused on IT operations rather than banking because we don't have in the Baltics Barclays Bank. But I started there and I was very happy as a graduate to get this opportunity. And I think I learned a lot there again about CR and how it is done in corporate environment. And at some point I was looking on how to expand my professional skills. I wanted to have a team. I wanted to kind of do some leadership, you know, also shape a little bit some other competencies that I wanted to. And I will be very open. And I think for the Baltic countries listeners, that will be no surprise. It was like, really, you could count on your fingers how many open job positions you used to have, you know, 5 years ago in CR sustainability in the Baltic states, not even in Lithuania. And it was like, if you're not browsing, you just noticed, okay, there's an opening in this area. Wow, that's interesting. Like you've been waiting maybe for some opening for 3 years. And I've got that interview and I was like, okay, that's a new market, you know, for me. It's I'm not kind of related to retail, but I saw an opportunity also to make a, how to say, to get a closer contact with the consumer. And consumerism is also one of the kind of problems of this, you know, sustainability topic. And I thought that I could really do more, more impact, like being closer to the consumer. And I saw that, okay, we are every day going to supermarkets. We're really close to that. And that's something that intrigued me at the same time. What can I learn and what can I apply from my previous experience academically and also in my work, and also what's in there, like so how, because I honestly understood that they're making an impact, plastic, you know, that much we use in our operations, CO2 emissions, healthy living aspect, so many things could be done there. So I was very intrigued and I was happy that I could find this opportunity to join Rimi at that point.
That's one thing that I think is quite interesting, right? Is I think for the average individual, one of the places, let's say, besides your house, where you can make the most kind of sustainable environmental impact is probably at the supermarket, right? And with kind of, that's probably one of the biggest places where you actually consume things, because you're getting, if you're not only getting food, but you're getting your kind of household consumables, your toothpaste, your soaps, your whatever else, right? And so I think, let's say for the average person, that's probably one of the biggest places where you can actually see a change or actually make a change. And I think that's a pretty interesting dynamic.
Indeed. I could just only agree, yeah.
Kind of a question, because let's say recently I've kind of noticed it seems like Rimi is, at least in the Baltics, kind of trying to be a leader, a champion within the sustainability space. Were they already trying to do that when you joined, or is this kind of a newer thing, or what is kind of, I'm kind of curious, what is a little bit of the evolution of that within the organization itself?
Yeah, for me, it was also a surprise. I was only a consumer, you know, and I was, of course, going to supermarkets to buy groceries, whatever. And as you said, what I also noticed that if you want to see this kind of things as a zero waste initiatives popping up, that's where you definitely can make, you know, a change. If you bring these things in the supermarkets where the majority of the people buy, or if you make some changes like in their consumption habits of buying plastic bags, you know, etc., if you put some educational messages, this is the place to go. Because otherwise, if I wanted to, it used to be I want to buy something zero waste, you know, and I have to go all around the city to pick from the small, you know, stores. And I was just laughing to my husband that, you know, I'm interested how much I spend, you know, CO2 by going to from one store to another. It's if it's like a summertime, I can go by bicycle, you know, but if it's a winter and you with your bags going all around to pick like rice is there, you know, some shampoo there, and it's just going a little bit crazy. So I was also one of my kind of ideas that I would like to see that these kind of, you know, niche things going major. And I definitely saw that this is, could be the place, you know, in the supermarket. Rimi, I think they had a good reputation also prior joining myself. They maybe didn't have such position exactly described as I am in now. But there was a team working on these things, focused a lot on the quality aspects. And that's also very much related with our strategy on how we actually choose the ingredients, especially for private label. There are a lot of sustainability things that could be applied, you know, in choosing the sustainably sourced cocoa, in choosing, you know, the right products from your suppliers, starting with the standards, you know, but also applying corporate responsibility tactics. So there are so many ways to really go deep into these processes. And I was really surprised that there is a lot behind it, but it's not communicated. So I think I was lucky also to have this background, you know, as a communicator to somehow help out, you know, to bring those initiatives outside the door, because it was really being done, you know, quietly, really nicely, things, you know, that I didn't even expect that they're doing such things behind the doors. So one of my tasks was also kind of to bring those things outside, to understand the scope of things that are being done, to gather everything around the strategy. I also should mention, probably, I don't know if that's news or not news for the listeners, but Rimi Baltic, we have a mother company, ICA, in Sweden. So they are the owners of Rimi Baltic, and they have ICA stores in Sweden. So we, of course, are lucky in sense that we are given from them the strategy directions and also targets that we have on the group level. So that's very, very interesting on how we just try to adapt that in Baltic states, because of course not everything works in Sweden the same works, you know, in the Baltics. And then also we have to take into consideration that we have three countries which are also different in a way. So we are working this way. And
can I ask you a question about that?
Yes, just of course.
Quickly. Considering that you have this parent company, maybe I'm wrong because I'm an American who happens to be living in the Baltics, but my sense is, or would be, and tell me if I'm wrong, is that, let's say, the Nordics were a little bit, let's say, ahead of the curve.
On
sustainability issues. So let's say because your parent company was Swedish, let's say you might have gotten the advantages of them being kind of already thinking about these topics and then able to pass those on to you guys quicker than would be otherwise if you were just like a, let's say, a normal Baltic company. Is that
absolutely 100% right? And I'm not even hiding that. That's super advantage, you know, what we have. And I also can tell that that helps us to lead a little bit, you know, because they of course are advanced. They are talking about problems that are not even relevant sometimes here or not being discussed. What we are trying to do also as a retailer, we also trying to show the way to our competitors in some cases on how things should be done, you know, and if, that we think it is important to notice. At the same time, we work a lot with the suppliers. So we have, you know, sustainability documents, guidelines, policies, and appendixes that our suppliers have to sign and read and understand our, you know, values and also principles, how we work in this field. And definitely, without a doubt, you know, Swedish strategies definitely influence how we are doing things here. Sometimes it's easy, sometimes it's not, because, you know, on the one aspect, you are a little bit ahead of the curve in the Baltics with all the ideas, but also you're a little bit lonely because others have not grown up to that. And we recently had a discussion here locally in Lithuania regarding science-based targets. I don't know if the listeners know about this initiative, but it's it happened around the Paris Agreement that, you know, we have this NGO, science-based targets organization, who are helping companies to set targets for the CO2 reduction that are in line with the science. So it's not, you know, somewhere from like there, but you really do all the calculations. So they kind of consult you and help you to put the realistic targets on your agenda, at the same time, ambitious targets. So it wouldn't be, you know, and, you know, in alignment with all the kind of agreement that has been done in Paris. So definitely we already have that, and we started to kind of influence our suppliers by asking the major ones to sign the same agreement and consult with this organization to set up their CO2 reduction targets. And in our local environment, in the whole Baltics, it's just something quite new, and only a couple of the companies, if they are not major players, they're having that. And even our retailers, you know, and the competitors sometimes say, oh, guys, you know, we cannot maybe join you on some ideas because we haven't set it up ourselves yet. So how can we ask suppliers to do so if we haven't done it? And then you kind of stuck a little bit. So, you know, you have this ambition. So now, we, as I said, we also are, as of 2021, climate neutral company. Now we are building our net a strategy for net zero. And we see that, okay, whoa. So we have a little bit to stop to think how to move forward, because you have done some things, you want to do more things, but it's getting harder to get everyone on board because you are dependent on a lot of other actors, you know, and yeah, how to get them on board. That's the question. You have to be smart, you know, in your decision-making and in your strategizing in a way.
On that note, I'm kind of curious about this, and I'm curious, let's say, how much you take each of these into effect. Let's say, how much of the sustainability activities that you guys are doing are, let's say, internally focused on, mm-hmm. on the RIMI organization itself compared to, I mean, I would imagine being a supermarket, there must be like thousands of either third-party suppliers or brands, yep. or whatever, and then, let's say, making sure that let's say the people that you work with are meeting the standards that you want in a sustainability level. I imagine that let's say there must be a fine balance between how much do we focus on our internal selves, but you also have so many other stakeholders that feed into what you guys do, that also kind of managing that is probably a big task in and of itself.
Yes, indeed. We have, as I mentioned, also one of our key backbones is the quality topic. And there are a lot of things that overlap in sustainability and quality. And we are talking a lot with our suppliers about, as I mentioned, also sustainability appendix requirements. I will not now, you know, be quoting those requirements because it also depends on the product group. But this is if they want to become part of our, you know, assortment, the suppliers have to sign the document and agree, you know, to do the audits, for instance, to not use specific, you know, chemical ingredients in some products, or for instance, now move forward and use the certified palm oil, different things, you know, that are in kind of, you know, into account, should be taken into account and are on our agenda. So we work very closely on that aspect, monitoring, you know, what our suppliers are doing and how they are agreeing to keep up with the same values and things that we want to do in our business. At the same time, what we have, and I mentioned probably the private label, So we are in control, you know, of those products that are under private label. And here we also can influence much more, you know, for instance, go further and reduce the sugar level, the salt level. Again, you know, some chemical additives, you know, that are added could be also removed just on our initiative. So we kind of go both ways. Of course, we are so much more strict with our private label because we are the owner of this and we want this product to have a very good quality and still meet all the sustainability standards and beyond. Then, you know, for the suppliers, we also set some specific bar that we feel that this is what we want to impose, and this is what we where we want to lead them. At the same time, my mentioned science-based targets initiative, it's again another tool how we are influencing the suppliers. We, as I said, now targeting the major suppliers that they would sign also science-based targets initiative and would set their CO2 emission reduction targets according to that. So that's not something that it's in the legislation. This is what we think that we value and we want to see. At the other part, you know, of our sustainability activities, as you say, of course, are directed to our own products and operations, especially, for instance, plastic reduction. So we want to see, you know, reduction in our operations. For instance, recently we had this great initiative in our DCs where we understood that we have these, you know, trolleys, how our colleagues are bringing products from one spot to another. And they used to, in order to products to stay in place, they used just simple wrapper, you know, which is in plastic all around this trolley, you know, and then it sets products in place. But it's just one kind of time use initiative, you know. It's just like you break it and you just throw it away. And then they kind of, from this technical perspective, understood that there could be some improvement made, you know, and they just put like a soft plastic walls on the sides, which now keeps the products in place, saves a lot of plastic to the company, and of course the money. So one of the activities on how we also make our colleagues to be interested in sustainability is to look from the economical perspective, because sustainability also pays off. And that's a very business kind of motive, you know, for a lot of departments to understand that this is not only nice message, you know, or in the as an end goal, you know, helping the earth, but at the same time, they really see improvements over the years, you know, on their economic aspect and saving the money. So this year we have this kind of internal, you know, slogan that we use for sustainability communication, where we say, okay, save money, save health, and save environment at the same time by applying different activities from sustainability agenda. So I think that's just a little bit around how we work in this.
A question that popped into my head, and I don't know, you can tell me whether or not this is relevant or makes sense, but I imagine that, let's say, if a new brand was approaching Rimi to kind of enter the supermarket, that they might be held to, let's say, a higher standard than, let's say, a legacy brand that might be given, let's say, more flexibility to let's say, grow into your standards?
5 years ago, yeah.
Okay, maybe the standards are already there, but I'm kind of curious, is that more or less the case? Is that sort of, you know, a new entrant kind of from day one has to be much, much higher, and then let's say stuff that's been within the Rimi ecosystem for longer has the, you know, gradual or whatever, yes, has some kind of timeline for them to actually do that?
I would say it's a good indication, but also risk, you know, that we try to manage. And one of the ways how we do it, we resign those agreements every couple of years. I cannot now tell you when exactly, because this is not what our team is doing. But currently, actually, we're undergoing resigning all the agreements with all our suppliers. That's a big work, you know, but also what it means that those suppliers have to reread, you know, because what maybe didn't mention that we do the updates for sustainability appendix. So it's not that it was created 10 years ago and we keep up with the same document version. So we do every year or two revision and we try to improve, you know, also add up sometimes new targets. So this is what our colleagues who are working directly with the onboarding new products are doing. And they, of course, this new supplier would have the newest version, you know, of the appendix that they have to sign. But not to forget the older suppliers, they also have to re-sign. And of course, that again leads us to the dialogue, because a lot of new questions appear. Okay, so how we deal now with that? And that's again the negotiation part that we have to do with them and understand, you know, can are we on this, still on the same page, you know? Because I think my observation would be, and I think my team observation also would be the same, that the suppliers also improving over the years, which means that if some things, you know, were not important that much 2-3 years ago, now they're understanding the importance, especially what is related with sustainability, because this topic is becoming really, really trendy. And companies want to keep up, because if you are not keeping up, then you are losing, basically, because more and more, you know, retailers will start requiring you such things. And this is what we are noticing, that some of the really big suppliers, they're sometimes even ahead of us, you know, and they have even more strict requirements for themselves. So sometimes, you know, what we are asking is not that strict, even what they are asking from themselves. So I think that's a good development that we are seeing. But of course, it's not yet the rule. It's still a little bit of exception for these suppliers to have even more strict rules. But can we resign.
Can I ask something about that out of curiosity? Does that mean in, let's say, certain circumstances that, let's say, these stakeholders might actually be, let's say, causing Rimi to actually up its standards? Because of, let's say, what they might see as a third party risk going in the opposite direction? Does that actually make any sense or not really?
I think it's not maybe making huge sense technically, but it is making sense, you know, that we are rethinking what we have in these documents and maybe we can improve. One thing is that it is important to mention is that we again use these documents on the group level. So that means that we are not making changes, you know, only as Rimi. We are having this as a group, ICA group, and that's how we are working with this documentation. But since revision is happening pretty often, we have this opportunity to include new and new ideas. And since we are also now currently undergoing the sustainability guidelines revision, we can add new topics, you know, that we think that now are becoming relevant and maybe wasn't 2 years ago or a year ago. So of course, we can get some inspiration also from our, you know, suppliers that are leading the sustainability journey. And I think that's not a bad source. That's a very good source of inspiration.
No. I mean, that makes a lot of sense to sort of, let's say, get inspired by your peers and your colleagues.
Learning, yeah.
A different kind of question connected to this a little bit, because you touched on that, let's say it's becoming more and more necessary. Let's sort of, let's say, let's call it the cost of doing business is being in the space. Do you see, because one of the things that I notice is I feel like this is becoming, let's say, a little bit more of a generational thing of, mm-hmm. of where, let's say, older generations might have seen this as a nice to have, but I think younger generations are increasingly seeing it as a needs to have. And if you're not sort of thinking in this way, I think, it, like you said, you're probably going to end up pushed aside out of business, just because that is, yep. let's say, the baseline expectation that the consumer has more and more.
I think there are such trends. We are doing a lot of surveys, of course, to understand, you know, where we should go and how to adjust, you know, according to the needs of the different generations. Because as you also understood, as a retailer and the mass market, we have this kind of pretty wide range, you know, of interest groups and also customers coming to our stores. So we have to, of course, follow, you know, their needs. At the same time, I think in the Baltics, it's interesting, you know, because I used to have these discussions around the mentality that we have here. And I would say that older generation, they not maybe necessarily think this is as a nice to have, but some things for them used to be very, very normal. As I also think, for instance, the zero waste initiatives, there were times I still remember that we didn't have plastic bags and everybody were bringing their you know, textile bags to the stores, to the markets. They used to bring these glass containers if you want to buy something. And it was such a normal thing to do. And even I remember that from my childhood. And then at some point, we as a retailers, we broke, you know, the trend that, okay, now this is like a normal thing to have a plastic bag. And the more you use, you know, the more maybe kind of, you know, it shows a little bit, or even maybe your class in the society, you know, that this, you can afford that. And that's why a lot of older ladies now in this is in the supermarkets, they kind of have this trend to put everything in the plastic bag, even if it's already packed. So that's about the packaging topic. And but if you ask, you know, and then we also see that in the survey, I would say that still, of course, older generation puts more stress on the price aspect rather than the sustainability. And the younger generation, of course, they start to really stressing out that, look, even if you have a good price, you know, and everything, you should not forget that these things are important, because CO2 emissions, you know, we are going to be the ones who are living in the future, and we have to deal with that. And if you're not going to deal as a business now, you know, we have even more problems. So the pressure is coming much and much more. And I think especially where we see it is from the activists and active organizations, NGOs. They are really contacting us on different topics and asking, you know, how you are doing that, how you are, what is your approach about certified palm oil? Why are you still using palm oil? Questions such as, what is your CO2 reduction strategy? What is your packaging strategy? Why are you not expanding your zero waste assortment more? These kind of things definitely are addressed by the younger generation, not the older ones. So, but that's also maybe, you know, normal looking from the philosophical aspect that the younger people are really driving the change, you know, so, and they want you also to keep up. So that gives us an indication indeed.
Interesting. I'm going to shift a little bit to one of the specific activities that Rumi is doing. I think, if I'm not mistaken, right, I think this is year one. Rumi is kind of the kind of leading partner on the Baltic Sustainability Awards.
Yes,
and I'm kind of curious about how did they get started? Why did you guys decide that this was important to have? Why did you guys want to be kind of one of the, again, champions to really push this project forward?
Why? Yeah, indeed. So I think it all started in 2020. We have the pandemics, and we also saw this niche, you know, that there are not kind of widely known sustainability awards for the Baltics. It were some initiatives, you know, on the country level, but not something for the Baltics. And we, as a Baltic player, we kind of saw that we can maybe lead here. So we have a partner, Helve, organization that comes from Latvia, and they kind of started with launching this Future Hub accelerator for startups, mostly that are working in green tech. And they invited us to be a partner in this Future Hub. We started also onboarding some startups, you know, that we would like to test, pilot some new initiatives regarding sustainability. And then, you know, Helva's kind of, you know, insight was that many enterprises kind of are creating already sustainable products, you know, and initiatives, but they still need support, and they still need, you know, this inspiration and motivation. And I think in this case, it was decided that maybe, you know, awards would be something that would inspire them and would inspire them to show up, because there were also a lot of startups that are working not like underground, but not very well known. And then kind of to celebrate all these stories, you know, that are being created in the Baltics around this green tech and in the Baltic sustainability community, it was decided that it could help also to develop the, to move forward the ecosystem in the Baltics, because that was also kind of needed at that time and still needed now, actually. So yeah, it brought together all this kind of, you know, business leaders, interested parties, you know, companies wanted to apply. I think it started kind of a little bit slow, because it was also no events could be held at that time. So the first awards were organized online. And we also noticed that, you know, not maybe fully cover the whole Baltic states. And this year, I think we had much, much better situation when we had much, much more also applications, but also physical events. So all these sustainability, you know, actors and players could meet each other and also kind of understood and learn from each other, each other's work network, which is also kind of, you know, thing that we maybe forgot over the pandemics, and yeah, and really kind of celebrate these innovations. So I think that was kind of a, in general, the start of this all.
I wonder if, let's say, the awards became sort of, let's say, an excuse, because it sounds like there might be a lot of other organizations like Rumi that were doing things, but were not really vocal or communicating them. And let's say the awards could be an excuse to actually talk about these subjects. And so it's kind of interesting that it kind of came out of you guys. I don't know. That's something that popped in my head when you talked about this, of like, no one, let's say, had an, not necessarily an incentive, but sort of a, I think you often need a reason to bring some of these topics up. And so this became, it sounds like to me, an excuse to talk about some of these issues.
No, I know. I think, you know, one sense is, you know, on one aspect is that we want to be a leaders in this, in sustainability. We see ourselves as leaders, and we really kind of want to make it count. So in the way, you know, organizing such event kind of shows that we have a deep interest from different perspectives, you know, also from the brand, you know, perspective. So it's not only about the awards itself. At the same time, I think we wanted to understand the scope, you know, of sustainability related companies in the Baltics, because it wasn't kind of done before. I'm not saying that this is kind of journaling, you know, now everybody one by one, but I think it was helping a lot to the ecosystem to understand how many of the companies and different size, because the whole awards, it's not about the big corporates, you know, kind of participating and trying to see, you know, who is the better, but also about the startups, also about the NGOs, also about the persons, because you can all nominate. Each country could nominate their person, you know, of the year who has done the most impact to sustainability topic per each country. So that was also kind of interesting aspect, I think, that haven't seen that before. So yeah, in a way that helps a lot to have an event to kind of, again, communicate the agenda and also kind of bring people together around the topic.
And I kind of mentioned this kind of in the lead up, but I'm kind of curious, let's say, sustainability is kind of a very, very broad topic. Kind of what kind of, let's say, how are you measuring this? How are you sort of, what was the criteria people were doing? I would imagine, yeah, just there would be a lot of different things. And depending on how this is structured, I mean, even with what you were talking about, I find it really interesting for an awards, you know, how do you compare, I don't know, something yeah. that's helping your health to reducing plastics or to lowering CO2, or it seems like a lot of different things that, you know, it's hard to compare those to each other, but
indeed. But I think how it was structurized, it was the application process. So you have different sizes, you know, you have different segments. For instance, you can nominate a person, you can nominate a corporate as a big size, you know, company. Then you can also nominate a startup, just a specific startup innovation category, where you only allow startups to compete and see, you know, who is doing the biggest impact. I wouldn't even say who is the best, who is doing the real impact. You know, I think that's the question. And of course, so we had this, you know, problem and solution criteria that you have really to prove, you know, that you are solving some problem. Then research, scientific aspect, you know, especially on the technical solutions in green tech startups, that's really how they work. Circular economy, systematic impact, you know, that they make. I think who helped us a lot is that we had, you know, the jury. And the jury was really big. I don't now even recall how many people were there, but overall, from all Baltic countries, I think there were up to 60, then maybe more participants in the jury. It was a really huge jury who I was laughing when talking with my colleagues that how even you made an agreement, you know, when so many people are participating. But Since Helve, our partnering organization, has invited people from academia and business and kind of tried to also bring everyone, you know, from different areas, I think that helped to kind of understand, you know, the scope at the same time. No, and yes, of course, these questions, you know, for the application. So, again, does the company address a significant, you know, critical problem in sustainability? Do they have any evidence? Do they have any metrics? How it was going for them for the last year, you know, again, long-term solution, what's their vision? Quantitative surveys that they maybe made, you know, they could also present as a proof of their success in solving that problem. And of course, again, checking out if they're applying the solution, taking into consideration the circular economy-based, you know, activities. So, yeah, I think influence on the customers, on the supply chain, all the different questions that they have to present the proof that they're really making an impact. And then, you know, you sit together per each category, per each size of the company, of the nominant, and then you try to understand who is really this year doing the biggest impact or has the breakthrough moment, you know, for them. And Yeah, I think sometimes it's hard to choose because, again, as you say, very different competitors are participating and sometimes very good solutions. You don't want to let anybody down that, look, you are not worthy of it. But I think this year was good nominants, you know, and very well received the award winners. So good comments around that.
Awesome. I think we just kind of widen this down. I'm going to ask kind of one final question with this in mind. Let's say for any either new company or someone just getting into the space, so like what advice would you have for them if they're kind of, let's say someone starting at square one, starting from the starting line, kind of knows they want to go in this direction, but is looking, where should they start? What are the first steps? Do you think?
What the first steps if they want to be a sustainable company or have to apply these kind of, you know, values to their business? Yeah. I think, you know, where to start is really to understand what problem you are solving. And that's the key. So if you know that there is a societal environmental problem that you are solving with your company's presence, you know, I think that's how all businesses now should start before entering this field thinking. If you are not solving anything from these perspectives, I think that's maybe not the right time to create a business, because more and more problems in these areas are arising. And that's a business responsibility now to find the business opportunity in solving these problems. And then, of course, there are so many guidance, you know, on if you want to create your sustainability strategy, that's also how you should start. Because we sometimes also are being still seen, you know, as a part of the business. Like there is this department who is doing something on top. And this is not the way it should be. I was telling to also on some interview that maybe, you know, we should especially are like as a CR and sustainability managers, professionals, our kind of, you know, task should be not to be the ones who are the experts in the company and like point of contact, you know, for all the information related to this topic. And if you or any department colleague has a question, you just come to us and we help to solve it, the problem. No, I think our role is to really make sure that everyone in the business understands the sustainability aspect for their processes and overall, you know, vision of the department and how they are solving these topics. So everyone should be like ambassador, understanding their problems from the sustainability angle and solving that themselves. And if they are need some guidance or, you know, vision or whatever, then of course the consultation could be given. But I would love to see, you know, that people are aware of these things in organization on a personal level, not like thinking that there is somebody who is taking care of sustainability in some corner of the organization. So yeah, the advice would be to have your sustainability strategy embedded in your business strategy, to have your solution, you know, ready to address social or environmental problem, and then, you know, find your business opportunity in solving these problems. And that would be, I think, the starter pack, you know, on consideration on how to create the new business.
Perfect. And Anna, thank you so much for sitting down with me today. It's been really, really great. Yeah, thank you. And it's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much. And good luck with all sustainability activities for everyone who is listening.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the ESI What's Next podcast. ESI is a program aimed at fostering socially responsible, environmentally sustainable student innovation through education and new venture creation. We're grateful to the European Regional Development Fund, Printify, SEB Bank, and Remy for their support. Tune in next week to find out what's next in the world of student entrepreneurship.